This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, where we talk about the biggest stories from across Texas. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons with Texas Scorecard. And we're going to be talking about a few of the biggest stories from this week, not the least of which is vaccine mandates, okay? Something that's got a lot of the headlines. Here to talk about that issue and much more is Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent. Jeremy, this idea of vaccine mandates, first of all, it's not a new issue of mandating these COVID vaccines. It's one that certainly got some new life a few weeks ago when President Joe Biden announced that he would be signing an executive order to require federal contractors and large businesses to take the COVID vaccine. And then we really saw it play up again when Southwest Airlines this last weekend was forced to cancel thousands of flights. A lot of people speculating and saying due to pilots saying we're not going to fly. They're protesting these COVID vaccine mandates.
That's right. You've got kind of two parallel stories happening. You've got the company or what the company is hoping the narrative is, which is blaming things like weather,
right?
On these cancellations, which is, of course, notable because competitive airlines didn't necessarily have this problem.
It was pretty sunny skies in most of the country.
That's right. Yeah. But second to that is you, of course, have pilots or alleged pilots, right, that are taking to social media. They're doing various, news media interviews, what have you, trying to make the point that they don't want to be forced, right, by their employer to take the vaccine.
And this is an issue that had been gaining a lot of traction over the last week or so as grassroots were speaking up against this, speaking up against these employer vaccine mandates. Such that they actually got the attention of the Republican Party of Texas, who was launching their own campaign against these.
That's right. You saw, I think, over the weekend, officially the Republican Party of Texas sponsored this kind of open letter, right, in the hopes of influencing Governor Abbott to add this issue to the call. To be clear, there was something previously on the agenda that dealt with vaccine mandates, but it wasn't related to employer vaccine mandates, one. And two, it left it to the legislature to determine whether one mandate should exist, right, for certain levels of government, and two, whether there should be exemptions. And so throughout the whole special session up until now, there were bills, right, related to this sort of thing. And so activists took to kind of a press conference that was held last week where they tried to put some pressure on, hey, can we move these bills to address employer vaccine mandates? You saw Republican lawmakers stand up there at a press conference and then later.
Not only that, you saw Don Huffines, a primary challenger to Greg Abbott, pushing him on this issue.
Right.
And then what did we see? But on Monday evening, you had Governor Greg Abbott announce that not only was he going to do an executive order to ban vaccine mandates from all entities, including employers, executive orders, I think, being one of his favorite methods operation.
Especially as of late, right?
Yeah. But also adding the issue to the special session agenda. Now, at that time, it was really with only a week left.
Right.
Now we've only got a few days left. Right. It certainly does look like that legislation may have trouble ultimately passing the finish line.
That's right. It's unclear, right? So anything could happen, to be fair. But look,
when they prioritize.
That's right. There were, I think, over 20 bills that were filed related to vaccine mandates previous to this addition to the agenda. And then what you saw as a result of this item being added to the special session agenda, you saw a significant bill in the House dealing with exemptions and a significant bill in the Senate be filed, almost immediately thereafter and kind of moving through process.
Right. And so we'll see. I mean, we've got a few days left in the session. We'll talk a little bit about that more later, but
sure.
What issues they ultimately get to. Probably the top issue on lawmakers' minds, at least, is maybe not vaccine mandates.
Right.
It might not be some of these other things, but is actually redistricting, right? The drawing of not just their House and Senate districts, but also for Congress and for the State Board of Education as well. This is, something they're supposed to do, right? They're constitutionally obligated to do. Where are we at that process right now?
That's right. So the Senate has passed there's four total items, right, they're doing. Has passed three of the four.
Mm-hmm.
They've passed the State Board of Education districts. They've passed the the 38 U.S. congressional districts, and they've passed their own 31 state Senate districts.
Mm-hmm.
Today, actually, the House is considering the 31 state Senate districts. They're also considering the 15 State Board of Education districts. Earlier this week, the House it was the first bill on the agenda that they've passed very late or early morning Wednesday, passed passed their 150 proposed district boundaries for House districts. And that is now making its way through the process in the Senate.
That was House Bill 1. Right. I mean, you said it was a lot of debate. I mean, it went on till about 3:30 in the morning the next day. I think, you know, if you had to summarize what a lot of that debate looks like, I mean, it was pretty predictably a lot of Democrats accusing Republicans essentially of being racist in the way they drew the districts, something we've known to kind of predict and see during redistricting from Democrats. But, you know, it certainly was a lengthy and at times pretty spicy debate.
That's right. I mean, there were several amendments to that effect. I think, you know, they had to abide by calendar rule. I think there was 57 or 67 pre-filed amendments, which were interesting. The big takeaway, right, kind of the bottom line of what came out of it, however, was that they shored up incumbent districts. Notice I didn't say just Republican districts, right? It is a Republican-controlled legislature. They shored up incumbent districts. And so what that ultimately means is basically compliant Republicans, compliant Democrats, people that Republican leadership notably can work with, they aided, right, in writing districts or drawing districts that would help for their reelection efforts.
Right.
Notably, on the flip side of that, there were a few losers in that fight, if you will, right, mm-hmm. that got districts that weren't favorable for their reelection.
Well, and some, you know, like we've talked about before, Michelle Beckley, somebody, a Democrat from up in Denton County, and Carrollton, somebody who has been pretty disagreeable with Republicans and even some Democrats alike. Had her district removed. She obviously complained about that. But the interesting thing is that, you know, even though this was a Republican-led process and a Republican-led legislature, one Republican member actually saw his own district wiped off.
That's right. State Representative Jeff Kasin, who currently represents House District 92, right? That's that HEB area up there in Tarrant County. His district essentially got shrunk in a way, kind of more eastward, and to be written in a way that was more favorable to a would-be Democrat candidate, notably the only incumbent Republican in which that was done for.
Yeah, and this is somebody who voted against the speaker, and Speaker Dade Fielding in the beginning. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, the speaker's never, you know, exercises retribution. Some have suggested this might have been exactly that.
Sure.
But he came to the floor prepared with an amendment to fix that, to move it around so that, you know, he would be able to keep his Republican seat and the other incumbents as well in Tarrant County would be able to. This is him laying out that amendment. Check it out.
The chair recognizes Mr. Kasin to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is a very simple amendment. I was drawn into a Democrat district while Representative Krause's district was turned into a new open Republican seat in the maps as they're originally drawn. This amendment simply keeps District 92 as a Republican district while making District 93 the new Democrat open seat. This will not change the Democrat to Republican makeup in the current Tarrant County maps, but will ensure that none of us are targeted in this process. I've met with several Tarrant County GOP members to ensure that everyone's voice was heard in the drafting of this amendment. This amendment would fix this problem. I'm not saying it gives everybody exactly what they want, but it stops the punishment of the voters who fought hard to send me to the legislature. The voice of conservatives in Tarrant County who worked and voted to have my voice represent them. I'm offering this amendment today to give this body an opportunity to show that diversity of opinions is welcome in the legislature. As I've had discussions with many of you, I'm hopeful that this message will be sent today, as these maps are currently, the message sent is that independent conservative voices will be silenced whenever possible. I'm grateful for the Texas grassroots who've stepped up to voice concerns over the current maps. I won't stop fighting for my voters and all Tarrant County voters until the day I'm no longer a representative. Hopefully, that will be a decision this body grants to the voters to make and not a handful of members drawing lines on a map.
Ultimately, despite all that, and after a bit of an exchange with State Representative Giovanni Capriglione, one of his Republican colleagues in Tarrant County who opposed strongly his amendment, ultimately the House voted it down.
That's right. I think the amendment was only supported by 17 lawmakers, which included Kasich, sure, of course, right? Notably there were some Democrats that felt sympathetic, I suppose, right, to Kasich, supported him in that effort. But I think more notably here, there were three, maybe more conservative members who were on the opposite side of Kasich on that issue. You had State Representative Matt Shaheen out of Plano, State Representative Matt Schaefer out of Tyler, State Representative Matt Krause, the Matt caucus, I guess.
Yeah.
Matt Krause out of Hazlitt there. They all voted against the amendment that Kasich had.
Very interesting. And so, look, still time left in this process. Something could happen in the Senate.
Sure.
These maps could maybe not make it to the governor's desk. They might have to start over again. Right. But certainly something that doesn't look good right now for Jeff Kasich continuing the legislature. But I will say, if he decides to leave, he will be joined by quite a growing number of lawmakers that are leaving. One of them that announced notably this week was State Representative Lyle Larson. Okay, right. Liberal Lyle, yeah, one of the most liberal Republicans in the Texas House. And I say Liberal Lyle, Governor Greg Abbott actually called him that before he later endorsed him a year later. But one of the most liberal members announced literally just hours after this redistricting debate that he's bowing out. He's not going to return.
That's right. It kind of confirmed reports that had been brewing and growing really over the last year that he would not be returning. But, you know, what's interesting is almost immediately after he said that, immediately after passing the proposed House map, of course, you had within a matter of hours, you had four candidates, right, announced that they were seeking the Republican nomination for that seat in the 2022 primary election cycle. It's off to the races, if you will. In that scene. That, of course, to be clear, right, House District 122 is in Bexar County. It's the northwest portion of Bexar County up there, right below Bernie, that area. And, you know, in the proposed map for redistricting, the district actually expands a little bit and includes some additional suburbs.
So. Interesting. When I say he's most liberal, I want to kind of run through this, though, sure, so people know. This is somebody who just this year announced his support for Medicaid expansion, right, joining Democrats in that effort. Was the only Republican, I think, that voted against election integrity, right, legislation. Mm-hmm. And this summer, when Democrats fled, left the legislature, broke quorum, and went to Washington, D.C., he was the only Republican member that voted against basically compelling, you know, punishments to compel them to come back.
Sure. That's right. I mean, he has, I think, over his last 10 or 12 years, he's been here since 2010. So over that time, he is certainly someone who's got a liberal voting record. Notably, of course, one of the things you didn't mention is that he had most recently requested that liberal former Speaker Joe Strauss run for governor.
Oh, yes, right? Exactly. I mean, this is somebody who has a real record. And probably looked, I'd say this session looked like, okay, probably not going to be coming back. It looks like now that is true. You know, you even saw, though, speaking of Lyle Larson, you know, you saw legislation filed by him this session just a few weeks ago towards the beginning of the session, essentially weakening the heartbeat bill that was passed by the legislature this year, protecting children from abortion when a heartbeat is detected. That bill passed. Went into effect last month, has saved, you know, 100 lives every day is kind of a conservative estimate we hear. Well, Lyle Larson felt the need to file a bill to add exceptions for rape and incest to that, so that those, if babies were conceived under rape or incest, that those children could be aborted. And that would be one thing. Certainly he was filed, he kind of had his press release on it, except oddly, even now with just days left in the session, and with, you know, no path, that's not something that's going to be voted on. It's not on the agenda. It's not something that's going to reach the governor's desk. You've got some Republicans signing on and saying they support him.
That's right. You've got, you know, the likes of State Representative Charlie Garin out of Fort Worth, Jeannie Morrison out of Victoria area, Stan Lambert out of Abilene, and Sam Harless out of Houston that felt compelled, evidently, right, to add their names to a bill that was going nowhere.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And interesting to note, too, when you look at the dynamics here, none of these members, right, none of the five, including Larson, were endorsed by Texas Right to Life.
Right.
I think all of them were endorsed by Texas Alliance for Life. All of them were endorsed by Governor Greg Abbott. Just some very interesting dynamics when you start to look at some of these members and the dynamics there in the legislature. But speaking of kind of the legislature and all that, you know, from a broad perspective, as we're looking, we've said it a few times now, the session ends on Tuesday.
That's right.
We've only got a few days left in this process. What can we honestly expect? Can you look into the crystal ball right now?
I think you can expect as to what they said yesterday, which is, hey, we're meeting over the weekend, or the House is meeting over the weekend at least to consider some bills, right? Mm-hmm. What we have so far up to now, right, is that you saw the Senate again, right, move very quickly on items that were on the agenda. So they're kind of, for lack of a better term, waiting on the House to do some of their work.
A familiar.
Right? That's right. With the exception of with the exception of vaccine mandates, right? As we talked about earlier, the original vaccine mandate agenda item. The House is kind of playing catch up, if you will. It is unclear, and I don't know that I could be the prognosticator to say what exactly will get across the finish line. But I can tell you, one of the things that almost looks certainly to not get across the finish line is that is the fix for the election integrity bill.
Yeah, when they passed election integrity legislation earlier this summer during the last legislative session. Obviously, praise is a big win. Bill contains a lot of good measures for cracking down on mail ballot fraud and the like. But one thing that happened was Republican House lawmakers, actually led by Republican Steve Allison, snuck in an amendment to actually lower the penalty for illegal voting from a felony down to a misdemeanor.
That's right. And seemingly this was off kind of everyone's radar, right? They all kind of patted each other on the back, said we finally got election integrity done.
Passed, the Senate approved, gets signed by the governor. Yeah. They hold their press conferences. Yeah, they think it's all great.
Right. And then to the credit of grassroots Texans, again, they highlighted this issue, via Twitter, via a few avenues, really highlighted this issue, put enough pressure on Governor Abbott to say, how can we say we're having a stronger initiative to go after people that do this when we lower the penalty?
Yeah.
And he ended up, I think it was early October, adding it to the call. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately, the Senate, Dan Patrick, got a bill through his chamber, Senate Bill 10, sponsored by Brian Hughes, the author of the Election Integrity Bill. Mm-hmm. And that got referred to the House Select Committee on Constitutional Rights and Remedies in early October. Hasn't gone anywhere since. You had Speaker Dade Phelan, when this was added to the agenda, basically say, I'm not interested in relitigating the issue, and it looks like he's living up to that.
Yeah, it looks like he's not interested at all. Right. Of course, you saw President Donald Trump actually sniping at Dade Phelan, I believe it was last Saturday or so, last weekend, basically calling him out, saying that he needs to do this, or, you know, he might be getting involved in a primary, you know, getting involved in supporting someone in a primary challenge against him. Certainly hasn't seemed to scare off Phelan, as there hasn't been any progress on this bill.
Well, what's unclear to me is whether or not, you know, if we get past Tuesday, if there is a, dare I say, knock on wood, a would-be next special session, is if this doesn't get done, is Abbott going to add it again? And is Phelan going to have a change of heart? I don't know.
That's the big question, especially, I mean, you said it perfectly. Will there be a fourth special session? I mean, if we've learned kind of one thing by looking at what they're able to do during these sessions, all of this, I think just about everything that has been on the call is all items that could have been covered during the regular legislative session and lawmakers chose not to.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. Thank you for that update. And you're speaking of lawmakers, the governor, et cetera, earlier this week at TexasScorecard.com, we posted three interviews with some of the gubernatorial candidates for Texas governor running against Greg Abbott, who declined an invitation to sit down with us. But we've got Chad Prather, Alan West, and Don Huffines. We've got 30-minute conversations with them where we go over a whole host of issues, go over kind of their campaign, what's motivating them, why they think they can win, et cetera. You're not going to want to miss those out. You want to check those out at TexasScorecard.com, YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And another piece of housekeeping here. If you haven't already marked your calendars and gotten your tickets for the Conservative Leader Awards, you're going to want to do that today, okay? Those awards take place on December 4th in Irving, Texas, where we honor grassroots leaders, not politicians, okay? It's always a great time. But early bird pricing ends today, okay? So today's the last day. We're still going to have tickets for sale, but if you want to get that discount, that early bird pricing ends today, and you can get those tickets at TexasScorecard.com/CLA2021. Okay, go there today, get your tickets. You're not going to want to miss it. It's always a great time. And lastly, want to mention that we've got applications open for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship, open to folks 18 to 25 who are interested in coming down here to Texas Scorecard for a semester and getting paid. We're accepting applications for spring, summer, and fall 2022. You can find the application for that and more information about the program at TexasScorecard.com/fellowship. Well, thank you again for joining us. As it looks now, like the legislature is going to be working working those final days into the weekend. We're going to be watching it as well at Texas Scorecard and trying to keep you up to date. So be sure to be following us on Facebook, on Twitter, at TexasScorecard.com. But for right now, thank you for joining. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week. So check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.